Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Ted McKinney, CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture and a former USDA undersecretary during the Trump administration. But first, here's this week's headlines. Russian forces launched an invasion of Ukraine this week. Russian President Vladimir Putin authorized what he called a special military operation in the country after building up military forces along the country's border for weeks. The international community condemned the action, with President Joe Biden calling the move an unprovoked and unjustified attack. The news sent commodity markets higher, especially the wheat complex, which traded limit up overnight on Wednesday. More shockwaves are expected to come as the situation continues to develop. The Department of Transportation plans to distribute $450 million in grants to help ports expand capacity. The money comes from the 2021 infrastructure bill and will be distributed through the Port Infrastructure Development Program. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says the bill is the largest ever federal investment in port modernization. DOT expects to distribute the funding this fall. And finally, the House Agriculture Committee announced plans to get feedback from commodity groups in an upcoming hearing. The hearing is being called to explore Title I, which includes the well-known risk management programs like price loss coverage and agricultural risk coverage. The Farm Bill is up for renewal in 2023, and many farm groups are beginning to update their policy to reflect what they'd like to see in the next piece of legislation. One such group is the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture. The leaders of the nation's state ag departments gathered recently, and CEO Ted McKinney says the Farm Bill was top of mind.
2 or 3 months ago, we came out with 10 what we call Tier 1 policy items, and the 10 elements of the Farm Bill are very much at the fore of those 10 policy Tier 1 policy items. So right at the top, Spencer, right at the top is where it ranks.
Mm-hmm. So just kind of zooming out before we talk specific priorities, I know a lot of folks are very familiar with some of these specific USDA programs, but might not exactly be familiar with the role some state departments of agriculture have in facilitating them. Can you kind of color between the lines for us on that and tell us, inform us where do state ag departments fit into the Farm Bill picture?
Sure. Well, at minimum, state departments of ag would be cooperators. It may be loose and informal, and in many cases, we are co-regulators. USDA, in some cases FDA, in some cases EPA, hand programs or elements of programs to our state departments of ag, who then implement it. And we love it, and I think they're finding, it's not easy, but I think they're finding that it's good because we're the closest to the customer. We know the crops, we know the people, and we're just as interested in them as at fulfilling the legislation, the regulations. So co-regulators would be one word, partners would be another word, and it all fits in the same category.
We'll be right back with more from McKinney, including his thoughts on what NASDA would like to see on hemp, nutrition, and more in the upcoming Farm Bill.
Farm Credit supports rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services in good times and bad. We provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural homebuyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. As cooperatives, we're locally owned and governed. We help agricultural producers feed the world. For America's farmers, Farm Credit, supporting rural communities and agriculture. Learn more today.
Welcome back. The nutrition title is typically one of the more controversial provisions of the Farm Bill. And this time around, NASDA would like to see some flexibility added to how state departments of agriculture can implement federal nutrition programs at the state level.
Well, we want to work with them in a spirit of great cooperation. And we know they have issues and desires, probably a variety of them, depending on the party. But in many cases, our departments deliver those. We, not all, but many of them deliver those nutrition programs. So it only seems logical that they would ask, how does it work? If we want to do X, how do you interpret that? How do you roll that out? So this is the spirit in which we are looking. Now, we also want to make sure that to the degree we have local farm to school, local farm to food bank, local farm to whatever type programs, you want to take advantage of whatever you produce in said state or said commonwealth. And so it's really just tailoring their wishes at a macro level to our state wishes and needs at a more local level. And when they're open to the ideas, it works pretty well. When they're not, there's tension. But I think overall, there's a great opportunity to deliver some good things for the people of the country.
One of the other areas that NASA has identified as a priority is increasing funding for agricultural research. This is a longstanding priority that I'm sure you remember from your days as a state ag director and as a member of NASA as opposed to a staffer. But the fact that this has been such a long-running push on the part of NASA and others, what does it take politically to get ag research funding where it needs to be?
Well, I hope that we're seeing it now. I don't blame everything on COVID, but I think COVID has shown some breaks or fissures in the whole system. Having come from the private sector, where I know there's been a lot of success in research and development and delivery of products, I know there's a lot coming from the private sector, and we should celebrate that, check that box in ink, if you will. But we're seeing a continuing diminished provision of funding to universities. Buildings and labs are getting older and aging. Equipment may not be keeping up with the modern technologies that are being introduced by whomever. Some of the basic research, not the applied research that private sector, private companies might bring. So the thought is we need to revisit that. Furthermore, we're now not number one. We're like number four or five in the world in the dedication of those research dollars for new discoveries.
So where do these dollars come from, though? Because the Farm Bill is, as much as folks would like it to be, it's not an unlimited pot of money.
That's correct.
Is this something that needs to be borrowed from other titles? Does new money need to be brought into the legislation to make this happen? What are your thoughts?
It could be one or more of the above. There seems to be a discovery of lots of new money these days, and so if it's net new money, then maybe some portion of that. I don't want to get into the rob Peter to pay Paul, because I respect that we have a pretty good farm bill from 2018, and I think a lot of people see it as a pretty good one that you may want to start as a base. So it's mostly just bringing some basic research up at the university or other levels and sort of match the challenge that's in front of us.
Mm-hmm. Another area where state ag departments do so much regulation per the 2018 Farm Bill is in the area of hemp.
Yes.
And also some policy from NASDA on hemp, specifically looking to increase that THC threshold from the current 0.3% to 1%. In the grand scheme of things, why is 0.7% such a big increase, such a big ask?
Yeah. Well, I would say in the broader sense, we see hemp as just a new crop that is an opportunity for many farmers. I'll give you my own example in Indiana. Up in northwest Indiana, near Chicago, hemp grows wild in the ditches. And it comes from the time around World War II when hemp was pervasive. It was grown commercially. So we want to get people past this image that, oh, it's marijuana. We're not into marijuana as State Department's VAG. No, we cleave that off. Hemp is hemp, marijuana is marijuana, and the two shall not meet in our view. So we think there's opportunities for the fiber, in some cases the oil, and beyond, whether it's for animal feed or for human needs of different sorts. So this is what we want to get straight and cleave those separately and maybe provide an opportunity, because the demand is out there. And right now it's a bit of the wild west that we better get to organize. Otherwise, we're going to see some disruptions in bringing the whole product along.
But does increasing the THC threshold get you past the wild west period, do you think?
I would say it might, but it's going to have to take some strict regulations. Mm-hmm. Goodness, that crowd is kind of a different, you give an inch, they want to take a mile in some cases. And that's why we want to cleave and separate cannabis, marijuana, from hemp for fiber or for the oils or other things. So it can help, but it's not the only answer, Spencer. Mm-hmm.
Recognizing that the Farm Bill coming up is going to be such a big issue, but right now I want to borrow on your experience as a trade undersecretary during the Trump administration. We're seeing right now an unfolding situation in Ukraine with a Russian military invasion there. What your thoughts on just how that can be expected to impact the world markets for commodities, given the rich agricultural production that's available in the Ukraine?
Sure. Well, my thoughts on that would be that disruption generally will occur, no matter what sector you're in, ag or industry or energy for sure. So it just brings disruption, confusion, and more across the board. Specific to agriculture, though, the Russia and particularly the Ukraine have become pretty good at producing wheat for different needs. And so, well, I think you had an article in one of your newsletters this morning where disruption in the wheat market, varying prices, rising prices in one sector, lowering prices in another, will likely be disruption. I also found it fascinating that President Bolsonaro from Brazil went to visit with Putin and laid out his support. Well, we just got access to Brazil with our wheat after a 10-year hiatus. Is he looking to get wheat from Ukraine and Russia? This is just the most perplexing thing I've ever seen for a Western Hemisphere country. So war and disruptions like war provide cause disruptions across the board, and much of that is yet to emerge.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know that it's hard to necessarily think immediately about agricultural trade relationships when there's military invasions. Yes. And people's lives are legitimately at risk here. But how long of a tail do you think a conflict like this could potentially have in terms of resetting some of those agricultural trade relationships?
Well, it depends on what position different countries take. For sure, if they remain neutral or aligned more to a Western culture like the U.S., it can enhance things. Likewise, if they take a position aligned with Mr. Putin, it can be a long tail and a very long pathway back. This is one of the reasons I think the Secretary is very interested in getting my successor named, and all of us in industry want to get that successor and my buddy Greg Dowd's successor at USTR named, because Spencer, more than half the battle is just showing up. And now that we're getting out from under COVID, showing up is what we can do, and it can make such a difference. If you're not showing up, somebody else is. So we've got to get that going. And I think particularly now when alliances are being formed up.
Ted, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Spencer.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel. But first, our Hannah Pegel takes a look at some key figures from the Department of Agriculture's Ag Outlook Forum in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
USDA economists are providing a bullish outlook for most of U.S. agriculture this year, although the Russian invasion of Ukraine has provided some fresh uncertainty. Ag exports are expected to reach a record $183.5 billion for fiscal 2022, while prices for most major commodities are expected to remain relatively strong due to solid demand. USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer said at the department's Ag Outlook Forum that spring weather is going to be especially critical this year to commodity markets, given what he calls the tightness of markets. USDA expects farmers to plant 92 million acres of corn this spring, which would be a slight decline from last year. Some 88 million acres of soybeans are expected to be planted, up slightly from just over 87 million acres last year. Wheat plantings are pegged at 48 million acres, also a modest increase from last year. Growers are expected to plant significantly more cotton this year, about 12.7 million acres. That would be a 13% increase from 2021. As for prices, USDA is forecasting corn will be sold for an average $5 a bushel this year, a decline of 8% from last year. But that's still well above the level we were seeing prior to the turnaround in markets in 2020. The 2022 soybean crop is expected to be worth $12.75 a bushel, down slightly from the average 2021 price of $13. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Glad to be joined today by a powerhouse panel discussing the upcoming Farm Bill and some of the discussions that we can be expecting to see take place as Congress begins to consider that legislation. We've seen oversight hearings, and now at a certain point, we'll see a little bit more concrete action from Capitol Hill. So I want to bring in our panelists here to discuss this upcoming legislation. Glad to be joined today by policy consultant Ferd Hefner, James Glick with Michael Torrey Associates, and Ryan Yates with the American Farm Bureau Federation. Gentlemen, appreciate the time this morning. James, I want to start with you, just given your current role with Torrey Associates, but also spent some time in the developing of the last Farm Bill as such a key member of that Senate Agriculture Committee staff for Senate Ag Committee Chair at the time, Pat Roberts. Wondering, as obviously the 2018 Farm Bill, when that was passed, nobody could have predicted the COVID-19 pandemic. Nobody could have predicted the drought that we observed throughout the West and parts of the Midwest last year. How do you think the bill is holding up thus far, James?
I mean, I think you've seen programs that were crafted work. We've seen, you know, the challenge of COVID, particularly the supply chain interruptions, not things that were contemplated historically from a farm program's perspective. And so, you know, some challenges there. And I think that's what members are doing now, is trying to find those gaps. And so I think the safety net, it's there for growers. It provides the certainty and the predictability that members were looking for in the 2018 conversation. But now the question is, what else is needed? What else can be done based on more recent events?
Ferd, your thoughts on this? Because as James pointed out, who could have possibly predicted COVID and the stresses that would place on the ag risk management programs?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the amount of farm policy that has happened post Farm Bill through various uses of the Commodity Credit Corporation, through the various pandemic relief bills, and all the which are still rolling out in terms of particulars. So I think that's going to be a big question going into 2023. Are those one-time one-offs that are looked in the rearview mirror, or does some of that move forward into the 23 discussion?
Yeah, and Ryan, bringing you into the fold here, obviously we've talked about some of the obstacles faced that 18 Farm Bill, but as Congress sits down to put pen to paper on what could become this 2023 legislation, your kind of view of the roadmap in terms of the big obstacles facing Congress as it writes this new bill?
Yeah, it's interesting. It doesn't seem like 2018 was that long ago, but since the 2018 Farm Bill passed, we've got 150 new members in the House, 27 new members of the House Ag Committee. We've got a number of retirements looming. Same thing on the Senate side, 15 new members of the Senate since the last go round, 7 new members on the committee. So I think we've got a lot of conversation yet to be had. I think, looking at the 2018 bill, it was a good bill. It's working well. But as the others have highlighted, coming out of the pandemic, there are a number of new supply chain issues and concerns that need to be discussed as we look at re-upping into the 23 cycle.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. The upcoming midterm elections are sure to have ramifications across Capitol Hill and in many different areas of policy. But for farm policy, our experts say the Farm Bill will remain the Farm Bill.
Well, the great news is we've got really good leaders on all four corners of the Ag Committees, from Chairman Scott and Ranking Member Thompson to Chairwoman Stabenow and Ranking Member Bozeman. Whatever happens in the November elections, we've got strength in all of those four corners, no matter who holds the gavel moving into the next Congress. So we're committed to working with each of those four and their teams in making sure that the questions need to get asked are asked, and we can move forward with the 23 Farm Bill that's going to meet the needs of evolving American agricultural system.
Mm-hmm. James, your thoughts on the possibilities of the midterm elections maybe changing the possible focus of the upcoming Farm Bill?
I think, you know, that the overall topics will probably be similar, but it'll, you know, depending on what happens in November, you'll see, as Ryan mentioned, a number of new members, both on the committees and in Congress as a whole. And I think anytime you have new folks educate, both on the intricacies of foreign policy, but also very quickly, you know, that the bill expires in that first year of a new Congress. And so I do think that the new faces you'll see, not so much at the helm, although it's worth noting, right now you've got four very seasoned kind of chair and ranking members, but you know, three of them new to that top spot on their teams. And so I think it's, you know, there's a lot of experience to pull from, but there will be a lot of new faces and new staff. So I think the education from the Ag Committee's perspective is going to be really important. And we're seeing that with hearings already starting.
Mm-hmm. Well, and James, I want to stick with you here because we obviously know that the mainstays of farm policy will be included in this bill. Things like the conservation title of the Conservation Reserve Program, the ARC and PLC within the commodity program, SNAP within the nutrition title. Not expecting those to go anywhere, but wondering any new ground you're watching for the committees to try and potentially unearth here as they consider this new bill, and any new topics that you're anticipating in the upcoming legislation.
I mean, I do think, not so much new topics, but you look at, we've talked about the pandemic, but some of the highlights, that, you know, that the spending with the authority that exists at USDA, not just in the current administration, but the previous administration, whether it was pandemic related or trade related, that you've seen some of the spending outside of the confines of a farm bill. And so I do think how that is handled, how that's addressed, there's been bipartisan concern with some of those authorities in the last several years. You do see a whole kind of evolution, more technology. The evolution of technology and how it's used, you know, kind of the food supply chain has pivot points and sort of you know, operations that might look a lot different than they did 15, 20 years ago. And so it's that question of, did the programs as they work today, as we modernize from a rural development, you know, energy, electrical perspective, do they still work for the communities that they operate in? I think those are some of the key questions.
For sure, and Ferd, as we look at this, any, you know, from your perspective, is there new territory there for Congress to consider as it looks at this next bill?
Yeah, I don't know. I agree, it's not completely new territory, but it's pretty clear that the current administration has a high priority on climate and on equity. And if you just look at bills that are being introduced by members of the committee, there's a lot of interest in those topics. They're not new topics by any means, but I think there's a question as to whether there's going to be more emphasis on those things next time around. I think that's possible. I think also the supply chain and especially the meat processing issues that have taken up a lot of the space in terms of pandemic relief, you know, at least raise the interesting question, are we going to look at a farm bill that has a livestock title perhaps? We haven't really had one of those in several farm bills now, but I think those are all interesting questions that we'll wait and see where it goes. But I think those are quite probably all on the agenda.
Well, and let's talk about that agenda, because we've seen the House Ag Committee have a couple of oversight hearings. They've got one scheduled for next week. We're expecting the Senate Agriculture Committee to pick up their ball and run with it here at a certain point with their hearing schedule. Ferd, I'll ask you the million-dollar question here. Is it a 2023 farm bill, a 2024 farm bill, a 2025 farm bill? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. I hesitate to make any predictions, but I will say, you know, 2018 was the first time since 1990 that the Farm Bill actually happened on time. So, you know, you can look at that as a, you know, 2018 is the precursor to 2023, and it will be done in the same year. I hope it will be. It's a complex piece of legislation. It has a lot of interests represented in the bill, a lot of titles, a lot. I mean, even to just do a status quo type farm bill takes a lot of work and effort, much less one that takes on some new territory. So, I think it remains to be seen. I hope and pray that we have a big sort of culture war fight over SNAP. If that does not happen, then I think it's probably more likely that it can start and finish in the same year.
Ryan, your thoughts? Is this a 2023 farm bill, you think?
Well, we'll see. I think it really comes down to how the four corners exercise leadership. I think these are tough bills to navigate, and it's going to take a great deal of bipartisanship. And And you know, you're not going to get everything you want. But I think the good news is folks are having the conversations now. The committees are going to start having hearings. The conversations, you know, beginning early is a good thing. I know at Farm Bureau, we've been engaging with our state Farm Bureau since August to really start forming our policy positions. And we're eager to begin having those conversations with lawmakers so that we can be ready to go. So fingers crossed, we're hopeful.
Yeah. And James, I'll wrap up the conversation with you because, you know, 2023, first year of a new Congress, 2024 is a presidential election year. Your thoughts on the prospects of trying to pass a farm bill during a presidential election year?
And that's what I was going to highlight. You've got some interesting dynamics there with kind of new Congress and then the presidential right behind it. I think there will be pressure to get it done quickly, no doubt. But I do think the budget question will be a key question early on how successful the product will be in kind of first year in a new Congress. You know, if there can be agreement around the funding levels and how those are allocated, that will really, I think, set the stage for getting it done on time.
Very good. Gentlemen, I appreciate your time. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, Hannah Pegel takes a look at this week's Map It Out.
Beef producers and the Biden administration have a shared goal of increasing the nation's processing capacity. A quick look at this map shows why that's needed. There may be packing plants across the country, but many of the largest facilities are located right along this corridor of the Texas Panhandle all the way up to eastern Nebraska. A lot of the nation's largest feedlots are right along that same path. But when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, a few plants going offline meant big percentages of the nation's processing capacity went offline as well. Now the administration and many farm groups are pushing for a more diversified beef supply chain. The Biden administration announced in January they would invest $1 billion in processing capacity expansion, focusing on updating the smaller independently owned facilities and building new plants in more locations. The hope is to build many new plants to give producers more processing options, as well as build facilities in areas that might be lacking options now. Building new facilities or updating existing plants will take some time, but could go a long way in the effort to eat into the 85% of the country's beef processing capacity currently controlled by just four companies. You can read Amy Mayer's latest and see an interactive version of this map on agripulse.com. For this week's Map It Out, I'm Hannah Pegel.
Join us for the 2022 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Speakers will discuss the groundwork for the next Farm Bill on March 21st at the National Press Club and through our virtual experience. Register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Welcome back and thanks for joining us. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon next week. President Joe Biden is set to deliver his State of the Union address to Congress. His remarks will come as the administration faces a Russian invasion in Ukraine and frustrations at home that could lead to protests in Washington on the day of his speech. Also on Capitol Hill, the House Ag Committee looks to continue its study of the current farm bill with a Tuesday hearing to get commodity group perspectives on the legislation. Members of the National Farmers Union will gather for their annual convention that wraps up Tuesday in Denver. And don't forget to sign up for an AgriPulse webinar taking place on Wednesday that will explore the intersection between crop insurance policies and conservation practices. You can learn more about the discussion being led by Phil Brasher on agripulse.com, where you can also stay up to date on the latest in ag and food policy news in Washington, D.C. and across the country. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit agripulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.